Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin. With guest co-hosts...
Zabuta.
Ishmir Singer.
Are you guys ready for the awesomeness? Come on! Are you ready for the awesomeness? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. People over there, are you ready for the awesomeness? Yeah. People in the back, are you ready for the awesomeness?
Yeah!
Yeah.
All right, welcome to number 197. Your hosts are Dan Q.
Reveal this.
Makalua.
Yeah, seriously, 2K, coordinate with us. We're not, you know, like having our podcast in the middle of you talking.
Advoca.
Hey, guys.
And the Mian team.
Me and my Skype phone node, unfortunately.
And I'm Ishmir Stinger.
Kind of what Mackie was getting at in her introduction, there's this announcement by some developer that has some kind of relevance to this show, kind of maybe. Can you help us out there, Mackie?
What, 2K? Yes. Watch the announcement trailer for Sid Meier's Civilization Beyond Earth.
Since the earliest of civilizations, we have made much progress. But that progress came with a cost. Our world has changed.
This is check. We're here for us.
And despite our advances in both science and technology, we can no longer deny what is clear. Our time on Earth is ending. So we turn our gaze upward to the stars and embark on the greatest journey in human history. A journey into the unknown. To discover a new world. A new home. A new beginning. For mankind.
Sid Meier's Civilization Beyond Earth, the latest entry in the Civilization franchise. Brand new game charting the future of mankind as they explore the stars and settle an alien planet.
Ooh, already being cited as the spiritual successor to Alpha Centauri.
Can I say it's about damn time?
Yes, you can, Mackie. Go ahead and say it.
Okay, I just did then.
So, is this Alpha Centauri 2?
The elephant in the room, I'm sure. We're huge fans of Alpha Centauri. You're not going to find any people that are more of a fan of that game than we are sitting up here. And as many of you fans know, the intellectual property rights for Alpha Centauri belong to a different publisher. But we like to think that the heart and soul of that game lives at Firaxis. And for all of you fans out there that loved Alpha Centauri, this is the game we have made for you.
Yeah!
For all of the fans who love Civilization games in general, we grew up playing those games just like you did all 20 years of the Civ legacy, from Civ 1 to Civ 5 and its two expansions. And this game is inspired by them all. It really is an entry that belongs to stand alongside the entire Civ pedigree. And it represents a new vision for the idea of Civ in space, for the idea of the future of mankind, based on all of those titles, Alpha Centauri included. So if you're a fan of any of our games, we hope you'll find something to like in this one. We'd like to take this opportunity to introduce ourselves on the panel here.
This is David McDonough, and I'm Will Miller. David and I are the lead designers on the project. This is Lena Brink, who herds cats all day. She's our producer. And Anton Stringer, who is our lead systems designer and gameplay designer. We could not make this game without him.
And there's some other Phyraxians there as well, including Kevin Schultz, who's the community associate for Firaxis Games. As we're recording this 5 minutes ago, he says, I've Twittered more in the past 15 minutes about Beyond Earth than I have in my life. It's worth it. Well, Kevin, how could you tweet about Beyond Earth before this? Then you would have broken the news embargo and you work for the company. I don't think that would have been a very good idea, so I'm not really sure why that's news. I think what he might mean is I've sent more tweets in the past 15 minutes than he has in his entire life, in which case, okay, that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. It sounds like he's bad at tweeting.
Not technically wrong either way.
You have to make compromises with your grammar when you're tweeting.
I think you have to make compromises when you're tweeting, period, but it's another topic.
You made a compromise when you started tweeting.
From the information that was revealed about Beyond Earth before there was the official announcement, I think it's fair to say we can take that with a grain of salt, particularly when a lot of the information is coming from an article en français that was then translated into English. Things get lost in translation, so I think it's safe to say that if you haven't seen or heard it confirmed by 2K or Firaxis, or at least promoted by 2K Firaxis at this point, like, hey, check out the preview of Beyond Earth at ... at least for this little while, then definitely take it with a grain of salt and see if you can find multiple sources saying the same thing that don't just reference each other in a big, long, looping circle. I'm actually looking right now to see if there is a frame-by-frame analysis about the trailer started. I don't see any yet. I guess we're a little slow on the uptake on this Saturday. And by we, I mean, you know, the Civ community.
The internet, you're slow. Dan wants you to go faster.
Since this is Civilization in space, certainly there's going to be cross-promotion for XCOM. That's in base Civilization. But are we going to have cross-promotion with Borderlands 2? Because 2K seems to be really all about this promoting their games within their games thing. Is there going to be a little claptrap robot doing the tutorial?
Well, it makes sense to have XCOM promoted in, sort of, because it's the same company developing. But I don't know if they would actually pull Borderlands in.
Civilization kind of got the Borderlands business model with all of the DLC for everything, including map packs. I guess that's just kind of 2K's thing. They want to milk their games for all they're worth after they've come out.
Well, in some way. I mean, they are a company, so understandably they're trying to find a way to make money and even more money. Although I don't think there's going to be any kind of like formal cross-promotion in the game, but certainly across official websites of each one of these titles.
Well, they're doing it right now. The panel was also announcing the Borderlands pre-sequel or something.
Well, and actually, just to that point in general, 2K made it clear that there would be no live streaming from PAX. And I thought, okay, maybe I understand in a way you want to have that little bit of delay so the people who are at PAX truly find out before, quote-unquote, anybody else, and they get to tweet it, for example, to their followers or post it on their Facebook page or light up the flares or whatever it happens to be, except nobody officially was even live tweeting. It is on the 2K channel, but it took about 10, 15 minutes after it was announced. 2014, I think that's quite disappointing when you market this as a big announcement and there is no live streaming, or at the very least, live tweeting. I don't think that was a smart marketing move, personally. But maybe I'm just too crotchety.
So Dana missed me, a crotchety old man, then.
It sounds unusual in a way for me to say that I'm sounding too old, because if I really was too old, I'd be like, well, it's a good thing they aren't, you know, live streaming and, you know, live tweeting. You know, back in my day, live tweeting was listening to a bird outside. So I don't know what you young people are going on about, I tell you what. But that, no, I'm not saying that. It's actually the opposite.
Back in my day, my Twitter feed would have had all of the news already.
Back in my day, there was a thing called TV, and they told you things, but not about gaming. You had to go to the internet for that.
Back in my day, live streaming was going to the bathroom. Okay, I'll stop.
Definitely a live stream.
My recommendation is it needs to hurry up and be fall so I can play this now. Thanks.
Yeah, no kidding. It's been too long since Alpha Centauri.
Did they put a release for Beyond Earth yet?
It said fall 2014 at the end of the trailer. Yeah. Now we know what they've been secretly working on.
And we're assuming, of course, that's fall 2014, like fall North America. Fall.
Yeah, nobody cares about Australia.
No, it depends on where you are in the world.
Well, if it was fall Australia, that'd be great, because that's like right now, but shiny.
There were, by the way, some forums and then some websites picking up the announcement of Beyond Earth earlier in the day, North American time anyway, including one article on a French news site that was deleted, but not before Google cached it. Ha! And then, of course, people translated it, and then it was on NeoGAF, and then it was on Reddit, and then it was on other sites.
Well, once it was on Reddit, it was on the internet full stop, so.
And then it started coming up on Civ fan sites like Civ Fanatics and people talking about it. Of course, I was reading through some initial reactions here because the Firaxis panel started 30 minutes before we started recording this show. And so I was like, I was hoping for Civ 6. I'm disappointed. Can't you just be happy for 5 seconds? At least say, yay, it's the spiritual successor to Alpha Centauri. And then say, aw, but it's not Civ 6.
Mm-hmm.
At least have some kind of balance there. I think that's in the minority. Although I know some people also said, is this really a new AAA title? People looking at some of the screenshots and are like, isn't this just Civ 5 Beyond Earth?
I will take Civ 5 in space, yes.
Yeah, that's what shocked me the most. It just looked like Civ 5.
AAA is industry code for it will cost $60 when it comes out.
And we gave it a certain amount of budget in marketing.
Doesn't mean new IP. It doesn't mean a major new subset, although I'm actually waiting for the comparisons to Civilization IV Colonization. I'm waiting for it. Bring it on.
We may have to hurt people if that happens.
It doesn't need new IP thing. If that were a requirement for AAA titles, it needed new IP.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, every new Battlefield is technically a new AAA game. It's not new IP there.
Every Call of Duty, every Madden, that kind of crap, yep.
If this were actually an announcement for Civilization VI, I would be quite worried for the franchise. I mean, they're certainly working on it, but it's got to be in an early design type stage. And if they were already talking about features and promising things, I'd be worried about a boondoggle like SimCity.
Yeah, and the other good thing about, even if it is reusing the same engine for 5, this is a good thing because it gives them more time to develop something completely new to do Civ 6 in.
How can we summarize this, I think, at this point? Because there's still new information emerging, and we'll have a more detailed analysis, even if it's a more detailed analysis of analyzing what we want to analyze on the next episode of the show.
Pouring over screenshots.
Pixel by pixel, guys.
Yep.
I'm just waiting for the, it seems that 2K and Firaxis have a prejudice for a certain shade of blue and green, and all, you know, I can just see it now.
No, it'll happen, no doubt.
Okay, that's not a thing to complain about. The planet in the original Alpha Centauri was pink.
No, sorry, too busy tweeting. Going, oh my God, Beyond Earth, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
If you would like to know more about Civilization Beyond Earth and the collective fangasm about this announcement, just log on to your favorite.
I think I speak for everyone when I say, holy crap!
GameSpot is shutting down. So, like, Civ 3 and Civ 4 aren't going to be able to use it any longer. That's right. I raised an eyebrow when I read that. Of course, one of the posters, I believe it was Kinect Soldier, already said that he's going to be starting up Steam groups for that to replace the GameSpot functionality. And I'm sure the multiplayer community is reasonably hardcore at the moment, so they'll have their stuff, too, put together. But yeah, that's the end of an era. No more GameSpot for Civ.
And no more GameSpy for the, well, hundreds of games that are still actually using the GameSpy matchmaking service and lobby.
Holy cats, we don't care about those other games.
Well, I'm just trying to show the forest beyond the trees that are Civilization 3 and Civilization 4, Phil.
No, the world revolves around... Okay, fine.
Just a little bit of backstory here. GameSpy was a third-party technology that was used by publishers and developers to host online services. It was acquired by Glue, that's GLU, from IGN 2 years ago. Last February, GameSpy, the GameSpy.com portal was shut down, and it was just announced earlier this month that the GameSpy service platform will be shut down as of the 31st of May 2014. The reason for this shutdown is so that Glue, quote-unquote, actually focus on its own services. Because ever since Glue acquired it, it's not like new titles that are within its service that they're putting on the GameSpy service. It was just kind of a legacy and holdover. And according to the IGN article, Mitch Dyer, different publishers are handling the shutdown in different ways. Nintendo explained that it would abandon hundreds of Nintendo Wi-Fi games as the titles relied on the same servers. Rockstar Games is apparently going to be unaffected, as Glue has been working with them for 2 years to transition their games from GameSpy to other online servers. Activision representative has explained that Activision won't be affected. We're working on an alternative that will be announced soon. And at this point in time, 2K Games, of course, the publisher of Civilization IV and holder to Civilization III before that, has declined to say anything at this point. But as Phil also noted, Canuck Soldier, that's John Ryder, he's the administrator and operator of Civ Players, has started the Steam groups for Civ III and Civ IV. So this is, you can organize direct IP games. In other words, this is a replacement. These groups are a replacement for the lobby and the conversations. Canuck Soldier says many people already have Steam installed for other games. I believe this is the best all-around solution, even though I know not everyone likes Steam, however. And it is free and does not take a lot of system resources for those older systems, quote-unquote. So there is time. It's not as though it was announced, you know, one day and then shut down the next. And it certainly sounds like in the case of, for instance, Rockstar, these companies have known or at least reasonably gleaned for some time that this shutdown was going to happen. And quite frankly, after the shutdown of GameSpy.com last February by Glue, I figured that it was just a matter of time before the multiplayer service followed. I'm actually surprised it has taken this long for the announcement to be made.
Yeah, me too. I remember we talked about this a little bit at some point on a previous show.
With regards to the Steam group taking over for multiplayer because GameSpy is shutting down, something that a lot of people don't know about Steam is that you can use the Steam overlay in non-Steam games as long as they are programmed in DirectX, which most games for Windows are. If you give Steam a link to the executable, when you start the game through Steam, you'll have access to the overlay, the shift tab where you can chat with people on your friends list, etc. It'll also track how long you've been playing the game.
Oh boy, for Civ, do we really want that?
I think what would be a smart response from 2K would be, and I'm not just talking about Civ here, but any other titles that 2K might have or other publishers, even if it was a very like small patch, obviously this wouldn't be one that would necessarily just, you know, pushed automatically, but some notice on their website, they have some kind of email service for people who have registered their games, sending out the message so they're aware of it, making them, pointing maybe even in directions, suggestions for where they could go to try to get a replacement for the system if they themselves have decided, like for example, Rockstar is kind of taking control of this in a way with Glue to have an alternative, but if you're going to leave it to kind of third-party solutions, then notifying your customers directly, even though you might say, well, that they bought this game years and years and years ago, well, there still might be people that actually still buy these older games, and then they start it, and then they, oh, GameSpy, and then they go to try to have a multiplayer game, and it doesn't work. Like, just some kind of notification in game to say that, oh, this is no longer available. Here's more information. Here's where you can find a resolution. Necessarily think that's expected. I think it should be expected. I just think that would be smart business practice, so you don't leave your customers having to try to find this information on their own. We're talking about Civilization III and Civilization IV, titles that have been out, in the case of Civilization III, this is what, it was like 13 years ago, and the last official change to Beyond the Sword was, what, 5 years ago now, something like that. So these communities are well established, and it's true that they already have other means of communicating to each other than in the lobby, but just kind of for the, I want a game right now, and I want to find out who is available right now for a game, I think something like the Steam lobby, and for the reasons that Canuck Soldier mentioned, makes sense to try to, you know, network together. Because, as I said, Steam can be used for other things. It's not something you specifically need to get, or, oh, now I need to go to this forum and create this account just because I want to coordinate a game and post that I'm available or looking for somebody to play with. So, but I think anybody who cries foul, Glue shutting this down, I mean, they are a company, and I would expect at this point for the cost relative to the number of people using the service and the likelihood that people are going to continue to buy these older games because they can use the GameSpy platform, which they probably haven't been, you know, managing in some time. There haven't been any updates. It's just been kind of legacy support, and like Microsoft and Windows XP, just this week at some point, you got to cut the ties for business purposes. It's cruel, some people might say, but they're not out to be humanitarians. They're out to make money.
Yeah, it makes sense for Rockstar and Activision to be at least somewhat proactive on it because their titles have big user bases who would be a little bit pissed if they couldn't just still do multiplayer. I can't even think off the top of my head what EA has that's GameSpy dependent.
Yeah, doesn't EA have their own non-thing?
Yeah, they've got Origin now, so they could probably just transfer their multiplayer stuff to Origins. That's probably what's going to happen there. They just haven't officially announced it.
I'm kind of wondering what Glu was even after, because Rockstar said that they'd been working with Glu Mobile regarding the shutdown for 2 years. Glu Mobile has only owned GameSpy for 2 years, so they apparently bought it with the intent to shut it down. What was up with that?
In February of last year, IGN's new owner, Ziff Davis, when they, you know, shut down IGN's secondary sites, including the GameSpy network, Glu CEO Niccolo De Masi, quote, "We expect that the acquisition of GameSpy will be earnings neutral in the near term. However, GameSpy team and technology is expected to help us drive higher monetization and lifetime value in Glu's titles from 2013 on," unquote. So I wonder if at that time they thought that, A, we can help the GameSpy service be earnings neutral, so might have in fact been one of the reasons that they were able to buy it is because it was losing money for IGN. Glu thought that they could stem that tide and that they could use that technology to then help with either their own technology, right, comparable one, whether it would still be under the GameSpy branding or not, and if there was that value added, they've gotten the value out of it. It's now been incorporated into their own services. In other words, the GameSpy service has now served its purpose. It's time for end of life. It's a lot of inferences on my part based on one quote from a couple of years ago.
Well, it started as a Quake fan site in 1996, so good run, GameSpy.
Yeah.
Although it wasn't for very long, and I actually wrote about a half dozen articles for GameSpy in the early 2000s. So there were a lot of people that had some connection to GameSpy, including myself, and I knew when it was shut down, it was, and it wasn't the first online entity that I was involved with either, that I owned and was an administrator of, or just was involved in general and shut down. But the shutdown of that last year actually hit harder than this notification, in part because, oh, well, yes, of course, that's not surprising. Kind of tying into what we've also been saying, it would have been nice if, and maybe we're just waiting for these companies to come out and say it, that there were plans in place, that there are plans in place for publishers to essentially know in advance, this is being shut down, this is when it's being shut down, this is when the announcement is, so we can tell our particular consumers, you don't need to panic, we're not caught off guard. We knew about this, and this is what we have in place, and to communicate that quickly and efficiently to their consumers, because I think a lot of the anxiety is over what next. It's over the unknown, because in some respect, it does kind of come out of left field in the sense that it's been more than a year since GameSpy was shut down and about 2 years since the company was bought by Glu. So what's going on? What are the plans? How long have you have known? And just to try to close that unknown gap so you can start the transition. Kind of a not so much what you face in life, but how you respond to it and how these companies respond to it and when they respond to it, I think will be a big test of when people look back on the announcement of this service shutting down, how negatively or positively it is viewed.
You make it sound like GameSpy has terminal cancer and we're getting all philosophical about its imminent passing.
I'm just starting to write a postmortem, that's all. I mean,
we knew this was coming, had a good run, and we should all learn from this experience.
You have a problem with my trying to turn some lemons into lemonade, Izzy?
No, it just makes me sad.
Oh, well, no, I mean, that's quite understandable. And I'm certain there's some people out there listening to this show, and they're like, what's GameSpy? Why are we talking about this?
Yeah, I have a vague idea of what GameSpy is. I think I saw it on a couple of games I've never played multiplayer in.
Exactly.
And now it's already shut down, and it was apparently this large institution that affected many people's lives. And I'm sitting here, like, learning.
So you are sad for not knowing what it was we had before it was gone.
I don't know if I'm sad. I have no idea how good this service is, but
you are so conflicted, you don't even know how you feel. Oh, that's the worst.
It's the emotions podcast brings out of me.
Sega X, who we had a topic of his on the last episode, And he was thrilled. He's like, OMG, my friend got into Polycast, smiley face. And he says, a small comment about Magin's statements about river-based buildings. Maybe I misheard it, but it seems he just took farms into account. What I meant by river-based buildings were watermill, floating gardens, garden and hydro plant all require your city to be built right to a river, not just having the river within your workable radius. And for those wondering, okay, what's the context of this? On the last episode, we looked at the trilemma of whether to, as your third or fourth city in Civ 5, settle for a hill and river, hill and mountain, or river and mountain, when you could only get two out of the three, as opposed to three out of the three. But elsewhere in the thread, Z-Wolf, one strategy issues for you guys to discuss. What do you do when you discover that your aggressive neighbor, let's say Greece, is seedlocked on one side and locked by you, his only neighbor, on the other? In this scenario, you have already committed two or three policies in Liberty, have two cities, one very new. I believe he means bribes didn't work, although bribes might to, marry off some of your relatives. So Alex might be into that, who knows. Anyway, brides, or both, didn't work. And he is getting aggressive. Why is this making me think of EU4?
That's about right.
Anyway, he's getting aggressive, and even if you send some trade routes his way, you are going up the tech tree because you wanted to get theology for a fast medieval era acquisition, lowering the cost of other techs. This happened to me a few times when I got a very decent army and wanted to expand, but after committing too much to that plan, expansion and theology, I realized that my aggro neighbor was isolated and would eventually come after me. When is it too late to say, gee, I better build an army? I would say at this point, not yet. You realize that your aggressive neighbor, and so it sounds like that you don't have random personalities on, or if you do, you know that Alex has randomized into his usual association, which is being an aggressive player. You know that the only way for them to go by land, so for, you know, an extended period of time, and it doesn't say what type of map this is, but, you know, he is locked on one side. Okay, what is it that you do? Well, if you decide that you do not want to take out Greece, then you start off for defensive purposes, but I would strongly recommend that at some point, given that they are locked, and I'm assuming that you're not, you can expand. You can go from a defensive army to an offensive army and move in on Greece, and at some point, and I don't know about Greece's technology level as compared to yours, ensure that if you don't have superior units, that you have superior numbers at the very least, and you eliminate them from the map, and hopefully it's before Greece finds other players on the map, and you find other players on the map, so that you can get rid of them with little to no warmongering diplomatic penalty.
Yeah, I agree. You get rid of Greece. It's two to three policies into Liberty. This is, what, turn 50, maybe turn 60? You're in the perfect position to get composite bows. And those are overpowered in the hands of every human player. So whether on defense or offense, you take care of Greece's army when he eventually attacks, or you get enough to convince him not to attack, and then you don't have a problem anymore. I would also suggest that you attack, because you're in Liberty and you want to expand, so you might as well take some cities that Greece has nicely built for you.
Z-Wolf does add, I'm playing on Immortal or Deity, so in this particular game, I guess it's one or the other, so it's one of the higher difficulties. What usually happens to me is that I can somehow hold the ground against that unexpected early aggression, but in order to do that, I deviated so much from the original plan that it is just not fun anymore. I think part of that might be a mindset that the best of plans, the plan doesn't go your way, so now you're upset. I think if you can channel that, I'm upset that my original plan isn't going to work, into what is my plan now that will work? Adapt. Recognize that it's frustrating that you're not going to be able to do what it is that you expected to do, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to deal with this concern, kind of what Jake was getting at there. And he also says, when that peace treaty is over, the AI has more cities and more upgraded military units and comes back to harass me. I think we're talking in general now, because if you're on one side and the water is on the other side, I don't know how this Greek AI suddenly has more cities unless, you know, they've gone across the ocean. Kind of sounds like you waited a little too long to deal with the quote-unquote Greek problem, where they might have decided, I'm not going to be able to take you out or do any kind of damage to you anyway on my border, so I'll go somewhere else and settle. And now you have to deal with going and eliminating those cities, which, of course, if they've expanded, then they've probably met other players, back to the warmongering penalty issue to begin with. And it's quite possible that, depending upon where they go and when they go, they could come back and then become a threat all over again, and even a bigger one than initially, and maybe have some friends with them, particularly if it's the case of Greece and, some city-states or many city-states that they may have on their side.
Or all the city-states.
It's also just part of the price of playing an immortal and deity. Sometimes even your best plans are going to go completely awry.
Yeah, and one thing about the warmonger penalty that you'll get for attacking Greece is that it could completely work in your favor. If Greece is somehow expanding either onto a different landmass or to a different sea, they probably pissed off someone else, not just you. And if you can gain an ally by making a joint attack on Greece, that would be ideal.
Z-Wolf does conclude, or Z-Wolf for you non-Canadians, ha ha ha. I see myself giving up on games on turn like 100 to 150 because I know what will happen. Is that too soon or too early to give up? Yes. Why? Refer to previous statements.
No, I agree. That's about when I rage quit games.
Yeah, you rage quit games at that point because it's no longer fun, which is well and good. But if you rage quit at that point and you have a civilization that's, you know, gone kind of off plan, you're behind in tech, you can still rally and win the game if what you care about is the win or the learning experience. But if you're in it for the fun and you have fun by executing your plan, your plan is in shambles, and you're not within the texture where you want to be, then rage quit.
I guess I think a key piece we're actually missing here in terms of your thinking and what to do and kind of turn markers is what victory condition are you going for exactly? Because I think a lot of the time you probably, we're talking about war, so it must be a domination victory that you're going for. But at the same time, he talks about, you know, going up the tech tree because you wanted to get theology for fast medieval. Is that statement in support of a domination victory, or are you just trying to go through the technology tree more so you can go into space? I realize space is far away from medieval. But and he talks about, you know, going liberty, so then I'm thinking, okay, that's a lot of cities that you're probably going to want to have. So does that mean you are going culture or you're not going culture? I mean, if this was before Brave New World, I'd be like, well, you're definitely probably not going to go culture. But I'm certain this also is in the context of Brave New World. So, you know, maybe you are still. I don't know.
Yeah, I was a bit confused by the liberty with beelining theology idea as well. I mean, you can make it work, but it seems like Z-Wolf is really sticking to his guns here on the upper part of the tech tree, when for liberty, you can really do very well going the bottom part of the tech tree. In fact, it may be better because the aqueducts are on the bottom part of the tech tree, and you don't get those unlike in tradition. Especially if you have this aggressive neighbor and you kind of need an army, maybe sort of, and you're monitoring what Greece is doing, you may want to just abandon going to technology. Like, you have writing, you have calendar, and you think, okay, let's not go too much further down that side, and instead, let's focus on getting my defenses up, maybe taking some cities, and then building the cities up from there, even for a science victory.
As a general recommendation, I would suggest saving often. And this is something that I do frequently so that if a mistake is made, however you describe a mistake, or you decide, I am not realizing that this is a mistake yet, but this was a misstep, or even, okay, this worked, but what if I tried this? Then you could go back to a previous save and compare your results. Z-Wolf, you talk about this happening in a number of your games, not just limited to this game that you have currently with Greece. And regardless of your difficulty level, I think that will help you deal with these threats better. And I think it will also give you more confidence in what it is that you are doing. Because I think, you know, as soon as you start second-guessing what it is that you're doing, it may very well be like a one step forward, two steps back. I think often in Civ and even just general in life that your first instinct is probably the best, or at least better than otherwise. So if you get more confidence by going through and replaying even the same game, by going back to earlier saves, you can compare results, and then you can be more assured that, yes, this is the way I should go, or this is the way that I should not go.
And one of the best parts about reloading from a slightly earlier time is you get to see how the AI changes in how they react to the board. So the first time, the AI may have attacked you, like, let's say Greece attacks you on turn 80, and you're not prepared. This time, maybe you build a couple of archers, and Greece no longer attacks you. And you think, oh, so I can deter the AI if I have a little defense. Or maybe this time you send some trade routes. Or someone else has created an aggressive expansion city into another piece of land that didn't happen in the last turn. There's a lot of randomness in this game, and by watching what parts of the randomness unveil and how that's affecting what the AI is doing, you really learn a lot about what the AI finds important, what it finds aggressive, when it's about to attack you. So if you play enough of this, you get this very good idea of, like, within a 10-turn time frame of when each AI is going to either attack you or hate you or do something weird. So reloading really helps with learning about that, as opposed to starting a new game.
And you also learn a lot about yourself. Aww.
Now, it is, for our learning purposes, where reloading can be very valuable if you're not just save scumming. If you save at certain points and then test, you know, what strategy would have worked better, you really can learn a lot from it, definitely.
This is on the thread for Polycast episode 195. It is from Hobbs Yo-Yo. He says, what features would your cast like to see added to Civ 5? You often address features that your audience suggests, such as colonies and bombing resources. What I'd like to hear are the new features that your cast would like to have added to the game, or some features from older iterations of Civ that you would like to see return in the game. So this is about new ideas and new features, not just improvements on old ones. So I guess concerns such as making the AI military move and shoot on the same turn is not going to fall in this category. I think an interesting thing that could be added is to expand the espionage system, just because I feel like that's the least developed system in Civ 5, and I think most people agree with that. And one of the ways we can expand it is to make it affect possible science or production in the city. So if you set your espionage not on steel technology, but on destroy technology, at a certain point, if you're successful, you may set an AI's technology back a step so that all of its progress towards that tech is destroyed or to destroy production. So if you spy on an AI and he's building a wonder and you want that wonder, you can try to destroy it.
Well, given that we usually get wonder notifications only a few turns before it gets done, I don't know you'd have time to send a spy in unless you were constantly monitoring them.
Right. That's so if you send spies into AI cities just as a general matter to either steal tech or something, you get to see what they're building when you click on their city. So oftentimes you'll see that they're building a wonder. And if it's one that you want, you can change what your spy is trying to do in that city.
And in this situation, your counter to a AI coming into your city and, say, crippling your scientific research towards whatever technology you're going for, the counter would be what, that you have a spy there yourself for counter-espionage, and possibly, you know, the buildings as well, like the constabulary and the police station would also contribute to your ability to both be aware that this is happening and then to stop it from happening?
Yes, exactly. And it makes the anti-espionage buildings a little bit more useful, because I think the only time these things are ever getting built now is if you're going for a diplomatic victory, you want an extra spy, a diplomat. Nice balancing of the things you can do in the game, which creates more options. It could be a pain, though, depending on how the AI is set up to use it, but I think it just adds another layer of defense. It's like the same way the ideological unhappiness is kind of a pain, but once you learn how to deal with it, it can really be a nice aspect of the game.
So I've got an easy one, since he mentioned features from old versions of Civ that you would like to see in this one. The ability to mix and match leaders and civilizations. That was super fun in Civ 4. Why is it not in Civ 5? Trivially easy to implement. I want to play as Gandhi of the Babylonians. Why can't I?
That was a cool feature. Extra balance, too.
I guess they haven't done it in this one because the leaders don't have the whole characteristics thing going on. I mean, they have a specific AI, but then we do random personalities, and that kind of is it. It just doesn't move the leader.
You have the unique ability attached to the leader and unique buildings and units attached to the Civ. Easy peasy.
Well, Genghis is not going to be a popular yet.
And everybody's going to play, like, Gandhi of the Huns or something.
I would like to see that as well on the espionage point, too, that was discussed. Yeah, and I actually hadn't thought of the specific application that you were talking about, Jake, but just an expansion of espionage in general.
Well, see, now I have this whole other game. Add space things in. Never mind, I've got Beyond Earth now, thanks. I don't know. For the most part, I like most of the things in Basecamp. I don't know if there's anything that's drawing from Civ 3 or Civ 4 that I really miss. I mean, most of the things that we think of, the things that people post in the forums, it seems like it's overcomplicating Civ 5, you know? They've done very well from the base game of adding just a little bit at a time to the complexity so, you know, it doesn't, like, overwhelm you.
I will say, and this is a minor point, take a page from Civilization Revolution and allow us to capture great people.
Ooh.
Mm, that would be good.
Well, we can with the great prophets, just not the other great people.
If they make the improvements, you kind of can.
Yeah, so when they've got it in the city when you're in the middle of attacking him and I roll over the city, if I get the workers, why don't I get the great person? You're working for me now, Einstein.
The other thing that you could do in Civilization Revolution, and this isn't maybe necessarily so much in Civ 5, but it makes me think more of Civ 4, actually, where in Civilization Revolution, you can use the great person to do something automatically, and then it disappears. And if you settled that great person in the city, at some point in the future, you could move that great person. Like, you didn't settle them permanently in that city. And whether or not introducing the ability to have a unique improvement, like we have for the great people, combined with a kind of one-off, and then the great person disappears, and then also have the ability to have them settle in a city, you could make the argument that that could be potentially too overpowered and or too complicated. But I would like to see the ability to actually have the great people settle in the city and be able to move them if you decide to do that. At some point you might decide, okay, I want the science boost in this particular city if it's a great scientist. And then, I don't know, maybe your city gets captured and then you take it back again and you got this huge loss and pop after the city being taken not once but twice. And you realize, this percentage-based boost from the great person or even just the base cost or whatever of the science, I'd rather move it to another city where it's going to be, you know, more secure, assuming, you know, that the great person didn't get killed or whatever, however it's implemented. I would like to see that. I think kind of what Mackie was saying, when we're talking about Civilization V, adding more at this point in time, I would rather the focus be on refining, modifying, improving some things that we already have, which you could make the argument that given that we already have the espionage system and are modifying what it is that we can do, I mean, yes, it's adding to the game, but it's not something that isn't already in the game.
We're not layering a whole nother system in on top of it.
Exactly. And I know Hobbs Yo-Yo doesn't mean just that, but when he talks about you often address features that your audience suggests, such as colonies and bombing resources. I mean, bombing resources, that's on a completely different scale and a smaller scale than the whole concept of colonies, for example. But like Mackie, I can't think of anything that was in a previous Civ title that I would want to see added because either I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that anymore.
Corruption!
Or it was just aesthetics like, yay, palace! Or, yay, building railroads on the water. I'm looking at you, original civilization.
That's old school, man.
Or that was kind of overpowered, like, hey, let's construct a caravan, and then let's have it rush that wonder production in my city. Hey, Civ 2.
Yeah, I'm just going to park these three or four caravans here and wait, and then all of a sudden, instant in wonder. Just slightly overpowered.
Leonardo's workshop.
Oh. Free upgrade.
The chat. Aaron says, I don't think the game needs any more. It just desperately needs balance. Melee, ranged units, policies, and ECAT 2468 says, and AI work. Oh, ECAT, of course.
Well said, ECAT.
Oh, he would also like to see vassal states brought back.
I would like to use words I'm not allowed to use on this podcast to describe how much I don't like that. No.
No.
It wouldn't work very well in the Civ 5 model, especially with the warmongering menace thing.
You don't rage quit when your super science city gets captured?
No, but typically I do not. I mean, now that depends. When we say super, everything is a relative measure. But I have, actually in a recent game, my capital was captured, but by this point in time, I had already taken over not one, but two other civilizations, including their capital. And then that capital became my science city. I was able to then construct a national college in that particular city. And because I had been ensuring that I was able to grow that city, you know, keeping happiness up, make sure that, you know, tiles are improved, and eventually being able to, you know, annex the city as well so I could have greater control over its growth and its production, etc., that it, in short order, actually became just as, if in fact not more powerful scientifically than the capital that I had that was just captured. But, you know, we're talking about mid-game where I was already established, like I already had multiple capitals, and I could recover from that. So it's always going to be the case, of course.
Yeah, or you can just take your old science city back. I feel like that's what I always do whenever I lose a science city.
Well,
spend 30 or so turns building an army, and then...
Well, yes, and the thing is, I mean, I was able to take the capital back, but by this point, it had lost more than half of its population. I've been taken once and then again.
Yeah.
So because I recognize that, okay, this can become as powerful as it was again, but as powerful as it was on turn 75, given its population and its science output, that same output on turn 110 isn't so good. So I was actually able to focus more on the cities that I did have, and I decided, yes, I'm going to go back and get this city, but I'm not going to have the focus be on it be the science output anymore, because it's going to take too long to get back to that point. And in the meantime, I have these other cities with the capacity to be just as good, if not better, than the capital that I had initially. So this goes back to that adaptation. But again, by this point, I was playing on a continents map. I had pretty well my continent locked down in terms of other civilizations, and this was kind of a desperate move from the last AI on the map, who, instead of defending their last city, they went across the ocean and landed in my capital on the other side of the continent where most of my forces were not, and I realized, they're going to be able to take that city before I'm able to take their last city, but they're going to expend so much effort in doing that that all it's really doing is buying themselves X number of turns. Yeah, it's hurt me, but they're not going to be able to recover. The city's going to be in revolt for an extended period of time. They're going to have no ability to construct any more units, let alone get them to the front. Those units are going to be injured. I've got an extensive road network across the continent. I'm going to be able to go and take that city back and recover.
We're not the only people that have ideas for the game. Pixel Ripper on the 2K forums poses the question, what if instead of choosing your ideology chose you? What if your actions during the game ultimately defined your ideology instead of just picking the one you want? Perhaps it could be influenced by the first three policies that you chose, the order you chose them, how many times you've declared war, declared friendship, your research agreements, etc. And Pixel Ripper asks, would this wild card add flavor to the game or not? What other actions might dictate your civilization's ideology? Research focus, espionage actions, etc.
It would add flavor to the game, and that flavor would be not so palatable.
You'd have to give yourself a score for each of those actions, and the game would be tracking it. And what people would do is manipulate the score so they didn't hit certain thresholds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but ultimately doing that would lower your strategic choice to some degree, because you would consistently do the same thing to pick your desired ideology. So your initial game actions would actually be more on rails than they are currently, where you can do a hard switch. And sometimes you want to do a hard switch for one reason or another, and having that option denied to the player actually reduces the total amount of choices you can make across the playthrough.
Yeah, or it'll go the opposite way. Instead of tailoring what you do in the early game so that you get the ideology you want, maybe you'll just end up with the same ideology every time, because that's how you play the early game. Like, I think everybody who is not being aggressive would just end up with freedom. The victory condition that order locks out is diplomatic victory. And everyone has a couple city-states and stuff by the time they get an ideology, whereas the AI, half of them won't have any city-states. And freedom, the soft lock of the victory condition that you're not supposed to go for, is military. So if you're playing a nice peaceful game, you really may have the lowest military when you get an ideology. So almost always, I would think the computer would just assign you freedom. And that's not always fun.
And it would reduce our flexibility, too, because sometimes the game's going one way, and then that AI shows up on your shore with an army, and you're like, well, time to go be a warmonger.
Not to mention the effect that it would have on the AI.
Theme in the responses was that taking away choices from the player is kind of not in keeping with the spirit of Civilization. It's all about having lots and lots of choices. An overwhelming amount of choices in some cases, but just being handed, oh, by the way, now you're a communist, it doesn't feel like Civilization to me.
And I think in a way we kind of have this in the sense of if you go down a particular ideological path and there's another civilization that's exerting its ideological influence on you and their ideology is different than yours, then you will now find yourself in a situation where you have dissidence, if not outright revolt. That comes after an extended period of time of ignorance or neglect on your part and not responding to that, either by switching to that ideology or buffing your defense, your culture, and or increasing your tourism, your offensive culture output towards ideology to push back on that. So it goes back to choices.
Going back to the losing to Science City, the last game I played, I actually lost my largest Science City. This was towards endgame, but it flipped. And I thought I'd never had a city flip on me before to another ideology because I managed happiness well. But I was halfway dominating the world. I didn't care at this point. So I said, okay, I'll stay at like negative 20 on happiness. I can still take over cities. And for whatever reason, not even anywhere close to any other AI, my main Science City in this game flipped over to the second most powerful, which is actually Greece, coincidentally, the second most powerful civilization. And I was absolutely, like, devastated, and that probably extended the game by some 50 turns.
Pax in this thread on 2K says that Galactic Civilization 2 did or does this, you know, where quote-unquote ideology chooses you. Events will pop up from time to time, and you choose one of three possible reactions to them. One good, one neutral, one evil. The rewards differ for each choice, and they move you in the direction of that alignment with each event, too. Okay, that might work with Galactic Civilizations 2, for example, because it also makes me think of Alpha Centauri, where your civilization is more like a faction. The faction or civilization that you've chosen already has a little bit of a backstory. It's not quite so much as open-ended as you would have, say, in Civilization. And quite frankly, the possible reactions to them, one good, one neutral, one evil, even if we can all agree on what a good, neutral, or evil action is, I would say a better way to look at it would be whether it's an event or anything, whether it's a good, not as opposed to good versus evil, like bad versus evil, but good as in your strategy. Is this a good choice at that particular point in time, knowing what it is that you know for your civilization, for what it is that you want to do? I don't think that kind of focus would work well in Civilization.
That reminds me of features from old Civs that we didn't mention in our suggest features for Civ 5. Random events! Who wants to see those back? Yeah,
don't go on yet.
Exactly.
A slave revolt has taken place in your capital.
Similar points. Shushu62, who was a regular co-host for a time on the now-defunct CivCast, which focused on Civilization World, Master of Orion worked down that path. If you recall, you could not pick your text, just your areas of focus. And of course, as an aside, this goes to Pexel Ripper's point of, you know, what other actions might dictate, you know, your civilization's ideology, like research focus, for example. Back to Shushu, those personality choices in Galciv 2 are the best part of the game. Master of Orion 3, however, points out the potential downfall. If the computer scripts too much of what you can do, you lose sight of cause and effect. Quote unquote. Well, you don't lose sight of cause and effect. Your cause is the game's programming screwed you over, and the effect is you probably rage quit. Shushu then says Alpha Centauri gave you the choice to play with deterministic and non-deterministic tech paths. Played 75% non-determined and 25% determined.
Alpha Centauri also had an option to not choose your techs, but instead areas of focus, and you would randomly get techs. They were weighted for, like, scientific advancement, ecology, stuff like that, and you would get ones depending on your area of focus.
That's actually not a bad thing. You would take a different path through the tech tree, at least, but then Alpha Centauri's tech tree was a little more spread, where Civ is pretty narrow, I guess is the best way I can put that. I mean, like, when you, especially when you're in the early tech tree, how do you define what you're concentrating? I could see a war versus peacetime division, but then what's in the middle? I mean, because you really would need a third category somehow. I don't know. maybe science, economic, and military focuses.
And so then it would work similarly then like in Alpha Centauri, where it would give you a quote-unquote random technology based on that focus, given where you are in the game. Like, would there be any other way to wait? Like, if you chose economy, for example, would there be any other kind of variables to try to steer it towards some particular economic technologies or others or priorities of? Or
I know there was a way somebody figured out how to do that with that in Alpha Centauri, but it was a pain in the butt to keep track of, you know?
To memorize the weighting for every tech. Like, you might know that pottery had 4 points of weighting for economics and archery had 2 points of weighting for military, and you could steer where you were going by picking those focus. But, I mean, if you want to control which tech you researched, there was a checkbox at the beginning of the game for that. Why didn't you just do that?
I guess I could see it working for a civilization application so long as there wasn't, you know, for example, some of the bottleneck issues we have right now with Civ 5, that you must kind of get this first before you're then able to get the next thing. So that kind of focus might allow you to kind of go around that. And so long as it's deterministic of where you're able to memorize the weighting, so long as it wasn't, well, you want to memorize the weighting of this tech because of what it gives you is almost always going to be what it is that you want to do in the first place, if you know what I mean.
Well, theoretically, you could memorize the weighting for Pixel Ripper's ideology chooses you thing, but I don't find either idea very attractive. I play this game because I'm a control freak, so I want to control every aspect of my civilization. I don't want to hear that they've researched horseback riding when I wanted them to research something else. Or congratulations, you are now an autocratic nation state.
I agree with that. When you lose control, there's less ability to roleplay. What if I didn't want Gandhi to become autocratic, even though I was taking over half the world? I think I should be a democracy.
Bringing freedom to the poor, unenlightened masses.
Yes.
Riding on the back of a nuclear missile.
Well, those words are backed by nuclear weapons.
It is true that if you were to choose something like this, there is that balance between, quote-unquote, having a choice and not having a choice. Because in the sense that something could happen in the game, and then you end up saying, well, I don't have a choice, I have to do this. Well, you don't necessarily have to do that, but if you don't do that, then you're almost certainly going to be hurting yourself. Kind of like into a gameplay versus realism thing in the sense that I want to feel like that I have control, but at the same time, I don't want it to be that I can control it so strongly that I can just rinse and repeat for good or bad every single time. I think what we're getting here is a matter of degrees, and that's not so easy to define.
Yeah, I mean, like, you always research pottery first, right? So it's not really a choice because that's always the right move. I mean, you could click on something else.
Yeah, I do animal husbandry sometimes.
Brave New World, I'm choosing pottery. I mean, as actually first and foremost, not for what you would think inherently, which is, oh, you mean, you know, for the growth through the granary. I actually know it so I can...
Faith.
Yeah, so I can do the shrine. But it's the fact that it's, hey, it's both of those things combined. Woohoo!
Too much loaded on that one tech.
Yeah, I've always been in favor of moving shrine to just be available from the very beginning.
Yes, because before we knew how to make clay things, we totally didn't have shrines of other things anyway.
No pottery, no faith.
Because we totally can't make stick figure and twig representations of our gods and hunting animals and all that. And
but once you have pottery, you can build cottage now.
So important.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-212-88-7659. That's 441-212-88-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. And just because Civilization Beyond Earth is in development does not mean that Civ 6 is also in development concurrently. Doesn't mean that everybody at the company is focused on this one title.
Praxis puts out a new game every year, I think. So Civ 6 may be next year.
I think it will be a while until we see Civ 6. Probably a few more years. That would be my guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, we haven't even heard officially if they're even going to tell the world officially whether or not Civilization V is done as far as expansion packs and or downloadable content.
Yeah, they did start selling a complete edition, but they did Game of the Year edition for Borderlands 2 and then continued selling DLC after the fact. So that's not necessarily an indication, because the publisher controls that a lot more than the developer does, which is why I make the comparison to Borderlands. So who knows? There may be more map packs for Civilization V.
Well, thank you for listening into Polycast, episode 197, with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Izmir Stinger, and Adwukta. And we hope to see you next time.
Later.
I've got to go be beyond this podcast now.
City sacks are the best sacks.
Civilization in space. Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. Oh my god.
Recorded April 12th, 2014. Civilization Beyond Earth trailer courtesy Take-Two Interactive. Firaxis Megapanel 2014 clips courtesy GameSpot. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive.
Why are you letting me lose my job?
Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.